One, two, three, four.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Behind the Curtain Ministry Podcast. Sorry for the long delay in between episode 7 and 8. We are still here. The good news is the next couple months are filled with great guests. Part of that was not being able to get some things scheduled over the last month and a half, and they cluttered up in the fall. So it should be a good fall going forward. But again, that's a great reason to subscribe to the podcast, as knowing me and the way my brain works, things will never be as regular as we all might like. So check out the podcast on iTunes, Behind the Curtain Ministry Podcast, and click subscribe, and they'll just appear magically in your iTunes. All that to say, I am happy to announce episode 8 is here, and rather than a phone interview, I am sitting here with Chris Pruitt, who is the happiest homeless person in Lansing. Chris attends my church, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with him about homelessness, and particularly, we'll talk about homelessness in general, but I am a pastor. This podcast goes out to pastors, goes out to folks who go to church, and we're going to talk about how the church can most effectively minister to the homeless. Before bringing Chris in, just want to remind you to check out at acrossroads.net, where we'll post every podcast episode along with some bonus resources. We'll put some photos of Chris and his signs on that page, as well as some of the documentary footage that Chris is involved in as well. So with that, Chris, thank you so much for being here today. It's great to have you.
Thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. First of all, for some people, a lot of people listening to this aren't from Lansing. Tell us a little bit about what you do. I think those in Lansing have seen you around. I know the first time I ever saw you before you were attending Crossroads, you were the Lions guy. So tell us a little bit about the Lions guy, and then maybe a little bit about why you call yourself the happiest homeless person in Lansing.
I'm glad you asked about the Lions guy thing, because that was a precursor, a beginning to what I do is, with my signs as a homeless person, because I was living downtown, working at a church, and the people downtown, even when I wasn't home, they're just not friendly. Mm-hmm. Always walking down the street, looking at the sidewalk, you say hi to them or good morning, and you get nothing back. Like, you know, they're downtown here, there's a lot of suits, a lot mm-hmm. of clicky-heeled, skirted women, you know, that spend a lot of money on their clothes, and they see somebody that's making minimum wage, and it's just like a social rift that is, because they make more money, doesn't mean that they have to treat other people like people. So I started the Lions Guy thing just to make people look up from the sidewalk and see something else. There's a lot of things going on, you know, and it was funny. You know, I had people who tell me this is such a, it's such a nice break from, because I lived right across, the church I lived at and worked at was right across the street from the Capitol building, and they see all these crazy protests and stuff, and here I come walking along, and they're wondering, well, what's this about, and then they have a good time and laugh.
Tell us, I'll try to find a picture of the Lions guy and put it on the site, but for those who are just going to be listening, give us like a mental picture of what the Lions guy was and is, like what your box, what was, you call it the booth?
First I started with 16-foot flagpole with my Lions flag on it and big cardboard placards front and back. And they were off the 0-16 season and 2-14 season. And then in 2010 they were running with a 2-10 record with 4 games to go. And I'm pulling my hair out and I'm going, what can I do? What can I do? it turned into where I'd really be chewing them out. You know, I was posting lousy Lion facts. But then the flag got old and I needed more space to say more things. And so I built an 8-foot by 3-foot square booth that I carried around and had people sign that were Lions fans.
Did you call it like the psychological health booth?
Yeah, it was called by Lions off-season mobile mental health
clinic. Mobile mental health clinic, that's what it was.
I had that for about 2 months out on the streets during the winter. You have to watch the weather. Mm-hmm. 5 to 10 mile per hour winds, fine. Once it goes to 10 to 15, no deal. But in that 2 months, I had the three bottom panels of the booth people were signing. I got 18 sheets of 3x4 paper filled with signatures. Excuse me. And that kind of came to an end. My little brother went in the hospital and wound up not coming back out. Mm. So that put the kibosh on that for a while. And then I got homeless, and then I started the sign thing. And I knew I had to make a little money while I was homeless. So I wanted to do it different, you know. Mm-hmm. And people are sick of the ones, you know, you see them in the same corner all the time, all the time. So I don't stay at one corner. I move around. I make my signs colorful. I try to make people laugh. At first it was just the signs, and then I thought, you know, people don't look at you, you know. They see you homeless, and that's it. So then I thought, I'll make them look at me another way. The first time with the Lions guy was the 16-foot flagpole, and then the booth, and this time I put a box on my head. And the first one said...
And what's on your box? So it's usually, what, smiley face?
Well, yeah, the smiley face, and on the other sides I'll put hearts and love and peace.
These are well... Just so those know that are just listening, these are very well-made boxes and signs. We'll try to post as many as we can just to get you a picture. These aren't...
A normal box takes me 5 to 8 hours.
I believe it, because these are painted, very bright... Very cool looking, very artistic.
And they only last about 3 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
I got them all. They're in my storage room.
Uh-huh.
Except one got burned up with my stuff where I was sleeping during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one casualty in the fire, and it was that was my Spartan box.
Where's your storage area? Do you rent something? Or?
Yeah, I got a storage room out by the airport tavern.
Okay, cool. I was wondering that.
And,
so
the first box said on it, on the face, you probably do know somebody homeless.
Yeah. Because
I figured when somebody sees you coming down the street with a box on your head, who's this? What's this?
Yeah.
And, immediate awareness about homelessness.
Yeah.
Now, people, whether they like that or not.
Right.
It's
sure
up to them.
Yeah. Well, most people, and we can talk about this now or later, but the homeless are looked at almost like they're dispensable, you know, in a way where it's like downtown, if they're gonna put something in, how do we keep the homeless away from that, right? So, because that'll, you know, and so it's because you say whether people like it or not, to be aware that there's homelessness, what a sad commentary really on what we think of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
What our society thinks of people. And we'll talk about the church as well. I know that there's a downtown pastor I talked to, and I will leave this person unnamed. But they said they were referring to. So we moved downtown about 4 years ago, and this person was giving me advice, quote unquote, and how we should make sure we try to keep the homeless away from our church, because if we let them in, then they'll just basically like. Never leave, and they'll scare away all the sort of the pretty young people that this person was trying to attract. Ironically, which is extremely unbiblical, and I question if this person's even a Christian, to be honest with you. Not just because of that, but ironically, this person's church was dying and still is dying and all those sorts of things. But I bring that up to say it's even in the church, right, this mindset.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And to touch on that, it would basically reveal where I worked, and I don't want to cross any.
Let's not mention the name or anything, but of the church. But you worked at a church. You lived on site in a apartment they had there for the custodian, building manager, so to speak.
Building
attendant, and they just kind of let you go.
Yeah.
Cold-heartedly, so to speak.
Not really, because, you know, I pushed the envelope.
Okay.
But it was because of how they, you know, they're struggling. A lot of churches are struggling. There wasn't going to be any kind of raise. And, you know, when I tried to talk about church business and politics, they wanted you to be a member, and I'm working there. But I wasn't supposed to say anything about anything.
Okay.
And just be glad I got a roof over my head. And so, you know, I kind of shut down, you know, and basically forced their hand to dispense with me and my job there.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
And it was a great relief.
Good.
And since then, I've been homeless.
Yeah.
And throughout my life, this is the most control I've ever had over my life.
Is this the first time?
And the happiest I've ever been.
Interesting. Is this the first time you've been homeless on your own, so to speak? Or is this
the longest?
The longest.
The first time was before I got the job at the church.
Okay.
I had just been divorced, and a year later got evicted.
Okay.
And that was 2.5 months. And that's when I stayed at the mission and the VOA and got a taste of that.
Okay.
But then 4 years later, back at it, you know, and I'd very much rather be on my own out on the street than going to any of the agencies here. And to go farther into that, what led into this was about society and churches. It seems like churches are the only ones that help the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Where is tax money? You know, how long has homelessness been around since the beginning of time?
Right.
How come society hasn't found a fix for it?
Sure.
Why is it taking so long to take care of a percentage of the population of the world? And it's aggravating to me to watch all this going on around the city, all these revitalizations, the NAPS building and the building mm-hmm. apartments around the Lugnut Stadium, and
right.
it's all $1,500 to $2,000 apartments. And,
right.
And they got $12 million this year to tear down 240 houses in the Lansing area. Why can't some of those be fixed up?
Right.
Why can't homeless people work on them? Why can't ones that are habitable and need work, let them live there and work on it? Yeah, it's a program that would have to be overwatched and overseen and strict rules.
Right.
But there's part of an answer right there.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I know people in every trade that are out here on the street. They just want to be treated right, and they never have been. And
right.
You know, like this prevailing wage thing that they want to repeal right now. They wanted me to start doing the signatures, you know, getting signatures
like petitions
for
that.
And I said, no. You know, finally, when somebody is making $10, $12 an hour driving a forklift for a masonry company, and you get on a prevailing wage job where you're finally getting paid what you should get paid.
Can you explain the prevailing wage?
There's a set wage for each trade
okay.
and each level of that trade.
Okay.
That when you get on a government job, that's what they have to pay you.
Okay. Is that like a raised minimum wage then for that job? Or it's the opposite? It's lower than what? What's that?
Well, no, it's way higher than...
Okay.
you know, that's why they don't want it anymore.
So, oh, is prevailing currently it is active? So I'm ignorant of a lot of these things, so you're educating me as well as people listening. So prevailing wage is currently active, and they're trying to repeal that?
Yeah.
They're trying to get rid of it?
Yeah, because there is a lot of... Just like anything else, there's a lot of abuse. Like, working on the state capitol right now.
I got you.
Every little scaffold they got going on a corner of the building, there's two people on it, and they got a port-a-john on every scaffold for two people.
I got you.
You know, when I worked in masonry work, you go bathroom, you go to work, hour and a half later, you're on break.
Right.
Go bathroom. Hour and a half later, lunchtime. You know, and it's a big waste right there, you know, and I don't know.
But I hear you. Yeah, so we'll talk about that a little bit with some of the solutions in a second. What I want to hit on quick is you're talking about homeless people that know trades and homeless people that want to work and all these sorts of things, whereas I think there is a general stereotype that are given to homeless people that don't have to do with those things. And I'm wondering if you can talk about that. What do you feel like is the... Obviously, the homeless population is very diverse. It's very complex. So not everyone fits into one little box. But what are some of the misunderstandings the general public has about homeless people?
One, that they shouldn't own anything.
Say again?
They shouldn't own anything.
That they own anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you're wearing a pair of sunglasses, or if you got a watch on, or a nice pair of shoes that you caught. These shoes I picked out of a dumpster.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody just said this weekend, you look at your shoes.
Really? Someone said that to you?
Yeah. Everything. Wow. This was in the dumpster.
Wow.
This somebody gave me. And I'm wearing it inside out because it's advertising bars.
Oh.
But, and then another thing is, I'll tell people, hey, when you take my picture, post it on Facebook. You have Facebook?
Right.
I've been homeless a year and a half. I've had Facebook 8.
Right.
You know, wow. And, yeah, I got a storage room full of stuff. My stuff and my deceased little brother's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what, am I supposed to sell it all or give it all away? It's just so I can fit that stereotype of homelessness.
Sure. What about the thought that every homeless person, so I've seen it on some of your signs, right? So I don't know if we have photos of these that we could find, but some of your signs, they'll say something about, no, not every homeless person is, and then you put out this list, and I believe you said things like, not every homeless person is an addict, is a pedophile, is a, all these things that people...
Dirty, drunken, child molesting and thieves.
Right, yeah. Because that's what people think, right, when they think homeless person.
Yeah, you know, in society, look, okay, homeless people, there's a certain percentage that are addicts. There's a certain percentage that are mentally ill. There's a certain percentage that are lazy. There's a certain percentage that are alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go to the upper class. There is a certain percentage that are addicts. There is a certain percentage that are mentally ill. There's a certain percentage, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that's what people just don't get.
Sure.
It's just, it's upper class, middle class, lower class, and I think once you become homeless, all those classes, you're declassed.
Interesting.
You're not in any class. You're declassed.
Which is dehumanizing. I mean, it's like you're degraded, dehumanized by
the way,
these other...
You know, just to say hi or hello or good morning, it's not going to hurt. Yeah, no, I don't have any money today, but have a good day.
Sure.
God loves you. I love you. You know,
yeah.
Hope you have, keep your chin up. Just something.
Sure.
The way society is, it's okay to be a jerk off.
Yeah. Hmm. Right. Especially to homeless people.
Yeah.
Seems like.
But like I said, too, before I got homeless, I was treated the same way. And all my life, I've been quiet, shy, trying to get a word in edgewise, in conversations when you just give up, and just because you build up so much to talk about that you forget what you want to talk about, and the conversation isn't there anymore.
Sure.
So, and it's in the workplace, it's in your home life. It's just, so that's, and then to be homeless and then to ask for help. A lot of what I do is just to get on people's nerves. Because finally it's a way I can do it.
Sure.
I can write it down and ha-ha.
Yeah.
I got my say in. And then when I got the box on my head, ha-ha, need you look.
Right. Sure. Yeah, it's understandable. I mean, there's a lot of pent up voicelessness, right? I haven't been heard. This whole demographic hasn't been heard. I haven't been heard.
And that rubs off into, work.
Okay.
Go to work and start the cycle over again,
Sure.
Just because people are...
You go to work as like a subordinate. Nobody, like the superior...
Yeah.
Folks, they don't want to hear.
And anybody just wants to pay minimum wage part-time, no benefits nowadays anyway.
Let's talk about that. There's this big misunderstanding, I think. Maybe it's true sometimes, but there's certainly a stereotype that homeless people don't want to work. So you see people that are homeless asking for money, and I think a lot of times in an unloving self-righteous sort of way people think, go get a job, right? Go get a job. And you've talked before about what kind of jobs there are for someone like you. How old are you, if you don't mind?
56.
56. So you're 56.
57 next month.
57 next month. Early happy birthday.
Thank you.
Have a sign for that.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a good idea.
So you're going to go get a job. What kind of jobs are there available for you? Part-time, minimum wage, you get treated
dirt. And
how does being 56 play into that even?
In 56, I want to be paid what I'm worth and my experience.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not, even though I might be starting new here, I'm not an entry-level person, you know.
Right.
I deserve, and everybody else deserves to be paid accordingly, you know. And this minimum wage thing in corporations, it's just all so mixed up because the CEOs are bringing in millions and millions of dollars that they can't even spend, you know.
Right.
And then the workers here try to get by with that. I know you can do it. You do a good job here. You can handle this squanderance of money well, too.
I just saw this USA Today article. It was in the paper last week, I think, and it was about the biggest disparities between CEOs and their salaried, you know, employees for that company. And it was just saying it as statistical data, but I remember one of them, and actually it wasn't a company I was familiar with, but the CEO made like $219 million.
Yeah.
You know, and the average employee made like, you know, 30,000 or something like that for the year, whatever. And there's two sides of that conversation. I understand that. But just those numbers are staggering. They're just staggering.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think you're saying the CEO needs to make $30,000 as well. But that's a staggering difference between, especially, when you're talking about.
And I'd like to know what they do so much anyway. You know, they got everybody under him that does everything. He's just directing them in a vision of his, you know.
I wouldn't say that as a leader myself, I'm a pastor, which is different than being a CEO, obviously. But it's hard to be in leadership. I mean, I think they do a lot. I think that they should get paid the most. But I think that there's a certain level that at some point is, I don't know the word. I mean, it's looking at the Bible, right, and just saying, whether it's giving to those who are in need or just this idea that, I mean, how could there be that big of a disparity between what you make as a CEO versus this person? And the stories of the person making a minimum wage could be a story like yours. Like, this is the fine, thin line between homelessness and, you know, non-homelessness, or I think of like single moms with kids or whatever it might be, and they're trying to work three jobs and all these sorts of things. And it's like, we're talking about people's humanity here, right? Mm-hmm. Not just like the bottom line of a company, but people's humanity and then their kids, right? Their kids' humanity. So let me use that to transition into a question of how is it that people become homeless, first of all? And I'm not asking you, just give me your observations, right? And then if you don't mind sharing like how you became homeless at different points in your life, maybe the first time around, and your story is different than the next person's story. So what are some of the other ways someone becomes homeless? I know you could go for a couple hours on this question.
Boy. Like I said, it's a combination of a person's whole life up to that point.
Okay.
Your personality is formed when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I was always quiet, shy in school. The class picked on. The bullies loved me.
Okay.
And the girls didn't.
Yeah.
So, more or less, kind of an outcast all the way through school.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, you're 18 and out of school, and you're supposed to be a man.
Sure.
And, it's just, I'm sick of conforming, sick of settling.
Yeah.
And that's what's making me happy right now, because I really have, I guess, just turned my life over to God's direction.
Yeah.
Whatever He feels I need to get through the day. Don't worry about tomorrow, because he'll take care of that too.
Yeah.
As long as he lets me wake up.
Right.
But, it's just the culmination of your life.
Sure.
And, you know, like, it's just, I'm not going to settle no more. So, everybody get a job at McDonald's. I'll kill somebody if I work at McDonald's. You know? And I maybe myself, because if I settle for that again, I'm just kidding about that. You know, I don't have any suicidal tendencies. But that brings up the gun in my sign that says, you know.
Yeah. I want to ask you about. So there's this thing you posted on Facebook about a squirt gun and a sign that you were holding. It says, I guess there's two photos up. So one of them says, if you can't show love, then shoot a homeless person. Bang, Chris. Bang, bang, you are dead. Only a dollar. And there's a squirt gun, maybe you're selling the gun. Or you get to squirt.
Well, I hold it with the sign.
Okay, and you get to squirt them for a dollar. Or food, loose change, a hug, compassion, understanding, or a beverage. And then the other side, be the first of your friends or family to shoot a homeless person. Bang, you're dead. Only a dollar. Same food, water, cigarette cans, change, a hug. Take that, homeless jerk. So tell me about that sign. And I assume, obviously, from that, you're expressing some of the vitriol that people show you. You're saying, hey, this is what people think about me. Do people say things like that to you when you're holding your signs?
Well, yeah, you get the finger, you get rude comments, and, you know, at least that's some attention.
Yeah.
It's the people that pull up.
Well, it's like you're taking their negativity and you're making it funny, I think, while still exposing their negativity for you're exposing it for the evil that it is,
yeah.
I think is what you're doing.
That's why I come downtown.
Yeah.
With my signs. Put
right.
it in people's face.
Right.
You know, just because you roll up your window, lock your door, and don't look at it, doesn't mean homelessness is going away.
Yeah.
And that's how they make people feel, you know. I don't want to kill myself, but that's the way they make people feel.
Interesting, yeah.
You know,
that's powerful.
You know, so thankfully anybody that's given me a buck for that, they said, don't want to shoot you. I tell them, thanks for that, you know.
Yeah.
But I think if somebody did give me a dollar and wanted to shoot me with a squirt gun, I'd probably give it back and not let them do it.
Oh.
But, and that would really...
Wow.
Give them a heart tug.
Yeah. Talk about, so on your Facebook page, you wrote with those photos, I see people with their front license plates, God is my co-pilot, crosses hanging from their mirrors, bumper stickers about love and peace, church vans pass me by when all I have for a sign is water please someone. Talk about that a little bit.
As a Christian, as I'm saved, I know where I'm going. I know where my real home is.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing I wish they wouldn't say homeless, just houseless.
Houseless, yeah, that's good.
And I try to give all I can. If I have something that somebody needs and it's in my backpack or in my locker at the drop-in center, or at the storage room, I'll give it to him. You know, God provided it to me once, and if I need it again, he'll provide it again
mm-hmm.
in some way. And just to have, if somebody pulls up, they got a cross, or the God, my co-pilot, is, by the way, if God's only your co-pilot, you need to change seats.
Good. That's cool. That's a good quote.
You know,
God needs to be the pilot.
Yeah.
Not the
co-pilot. I'll be making a sign like that soon.
That's
but,
awesome.
But this person has to be a Christian. They're my brother. Well, everybody in the world is my brother. I love everybody. I don't have to like them.
Sure.
But I love them. I know they got problems. Everybody's got problems. But for them to pull up, you know... Most of my thing that I do is about the message that comes out on the sign. I'll have something in my mind, and then it comes out completely different every time. God directs it a different way all the time. And for them to pull up and not even look at me.
Right.
Or give me some words of encouragement. It's not always about money. You know, I get some money, but, you know, I never ask anybody for anything. I let my signs and what I do speak for that. And if God touches their heart to bless me some way, then that's what I have to accept.
Mm-hmm.
I don't push the matter with anybody. I don't invade their space. I give them respect.
Right.
And when I don't even get eye contact or a wave or some words of encouragement, that's like disrespecting me.
Yeah.
As a person, as a human being, as a fellow Christian.
Let me ask you, this will kind of be like two or three questions in one, I think. So in Lansing, and I think other cities are the same, but in Lansing, most of the main, you know, intersections around really all over town, not just downtown, there'll be folks holding the signs, the cardboard signs. And I'm just kind of wondering your commentary on those folks. I often wonder, my wife and I'll have these conversations. I'll just be honest, this, like I told you when I was talking about interviewing, this is called Behind the Curtain, so we can be honest here. And I share my own honesty here as far as saying, like, I'm probably not right about this, but I tend to be judgmental about those folks in this sense. I just wonder, first of all, some of them are even homeless, and I kind of, you have different mindsets of thinking about that. Again, this is two or three questions in one. One thought is like, okay, and this is like, so when you're in your car, you pull up to the red light. I've had a guy take his sign and like put it over my windshield, you know, like not touching my car, but over my windshield, sort of like this. My fear is a lot of these homeless folks asking for money are addicts. I've had that experience before, you know, neighbor on my street. I live in a poor neighborhood, and he was hitting me up for money for his kids, and he was really using it on cocaine, which we found out later, or crack, I think it was, crack. And those sorts of things. So I fear, or just booze, you know, people that are on just alcoholics, and you're going to give them money, and they're just going to buy booze with it. There's a thought that I have, and I wonder what you think of this thought, and we can unpack these a little more organized, too, is, okay, I'm going to support those agencies. I'm going to support the places that are serving meals, right? I know.
Rolling. You're going to get into a long list of stuff
here
today.
We'll unpack these a little bit.
And I won't be
here.
Able to address it all.
We'll unpack it one by one, but I see those folks, and I think, look, you know, I know that the rescue mission has three meals a day. I know the VOA has three meals a day, so, you know, instead of standing here asking me for money for food, can you go down there and get some food? So I say all that to, let me start with the first question. In your experience, what is your take on those that stand specifically at the street corners? Maybe you do or don't even know this, but I mean, are some of them not even homeless? Are some of them just sort of con artists in a sense? Is that legitimate homelessness? Is that a legitimate, do you see that different as what you do with your signs?
Of course there's cons.
Sure.
Bernie Madoff.
Sure.
The banking debacle. GM and everything. Why is it GM and Ford can get big handouts to help them out?
Right.
To help get them back on their feet.
Right.
But the homeless can't get a dollar or two?
Right.
Tax money can't be spent on a new place to go? Like, especially at night. Lansing needs a place for homeless to go at night. Because besides the mission only holds so many people, but the mission is like revisiting nursery school.
Yeah.
And yeah, you have to swallow your pride. I've swallowed all I want to swallow. You know.
Sure.
I want to keep my dignity.
Yeah.
And of course, when you're going to these places, you're with some unsavory characters. You know, I can handle being around criminals a little bit, but sex offenders and you know, I'm the gay movement, more power to them, but I don't want to shower with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the VOA is a big drunk house. They call it a wet shelter because
mm-hmm.
they tolerate it as long as you're not making any trouble. But
mm-hmm.
what does alcohol do? It makes trouble. And drugs. And well, now everybody wants to fight all the time.
When you say night, you mean overnight?
Yeah. A place to go to sit, watch TV, maybe take a snooze, you know?
Yeah.
It's this big, like, all this tax money going in. I don't know. It's got to be getting close to, like, $1 billion around Lansing in the past few years. Why can't a smidgen of everything that they do, they got to do something towards the homeless and towards alleviating the problems?
Take the mission of VOA as two different extremes. So you have the mission as like a nursery. So many rules. It's like, you know, so many rules. Then the VOA, it's like a wet shelter. They let you in when you're drunk and those sorts of things. If you were to, let's say you were to create, and I was going to give you a whatever budget, and you can create a night shelter for homeless to hang out, sleep. What's a happy medium in a sense? You don't want a bunch of drunk people in there.
No.
But you also don't want it to be a nursery.
We want a place that
would, what rules would you set up and how would you police those?
Well, just the normal rules, you know, right? Like a human being, treat each other with respect.
Right.
And if you don't, you ain't coming. You know,
sure.
The VOA has its rules posted right on the wall, but they don't enforce them.
Okay.
Unless you are obeying them, and then you do one little thing, and then they crawl up your butt and kick you out.
So it's
and then all these people that get drunk and cause trouble all the time, they're fine as can be, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't like being nitpicked.
Sure.
Over little things when so many other big things are happening.
That's a challenge.
Yeah. So I don't. That's part of the reason I'm the happiest homeless person, because God's helping me make it without going to those places.
Okay, that's helpful. So back to my part of my question, like I said, there were three or four questions in there, but do you see what you do with the signs and trying to encourage people and such different than what the folks are doing on, like, the intersection of Frandor, for example, with the cardboard signs and standing there when the cars come up, or is it the same?
It's the same and different.
Okay.
You know, I don't ask for anything, but people say you're asking with your sign. But at least my sign has got a poem on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a big smiley face and hearts with love and peace and hope and faith. And a box on my head. And I'll be acting up on the corner, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm consider myself more of an entertainer.
Yeah.
I should go and just get a DBA doing business as homeless sign guy. And then when they say get a job, I flip the sign around and it'll be taped on the back of it. This is my business, buddy.
Right.
Because it is. When I have my picture taken, if I had all the pictures that people have taken me over the past year and a half, it would probably fill the walls on this room four or five times. You know. So I know I do have an entertainment value to people. And when I'm got the box, I don't always wear the box.
Right.
But then, too, you know, more people will look at me and wave and smile when I have the box on. But there's still the ones that, when they see that word homeless,
mm-hmm.
well, that's it. You're not a person no more.
Sure. So what is it about the system that isn't working? So, for example, there's things like Section 8 out there. Section 8, I think, is a Michigan thing, so I don't know if, you know.
Yeah, I think it's nationwide.
Is it nationwide?
I think so.
I've
never been on it, but the people that know that, you know, before I got homeless and knew homeless people that were on Section 8, you know, it's just life circumstances, you know.
Section 8's a housing program, and what is it? It's paid like, the government will pay like 3/4 of your rent or something like that.
Yeah,
something along those lines.
Yeah. And then, I'm not sure about specifics.
How do you get on that? Is that something you'd be interested in, or if to people, you know, DHS and
okay,
the system, so to speak?
Let's start with people that I know have had it,
mm-hmm.
been on it. It works for some, just like anything else. It works for some, doesn't for others. Now, when you go to the VOA, I guess that's where you have to go to get the Section 8 here to apply for it.
Okay. You have to stay there for 30 days or something like that? Is that what that program is?
I don't know what their that it's always changing.
Okay.
But people that I know that have got it through there, I think they should have them go through like outpatient therapy for addictions and whatever their problems are before they give them Section 8. Because when they get into it and they haven't addressed the problems,
sure,
they get kicked out and then they lose Section 8 for life.
Oh, okay. Yikes.
So I think it should be more safeguarded and, yeah, made more available to people that need it, but make sure that they're along the lines of getting into that mainstream of life again.
Right. Yeah.
Me, I don't really particularly care if I live anywhere now.
Yeah.
I like it the way I'm doing, as long as nobody comes after me or steals my things or burns them. There's pictures of that,
mm-hmm.
that you might be able to put on. I don't know. But and then part of they want to help me get housing, but I'm trying to plan this trip. I want to see Cumberland Gap before I die. And to go down there, it's 526 miles. I want to get funding and money and bikes and a camera and stop in 5 cities on the way, Jackson, Dayton, Cincinnati, Covington, and Lexington, Kentucky, and have the homeless community come to like a laundromat and pay for their laundry, give them vouchers, not money.
Yeah.
Grill out and no hot dogs and hamburgers or Little Caesars pizza. Cook something nice. And that's where you come into the meals at the places. Yeah, you can go to the Mission and eat. Yeah, you can go to the VOA and eat. If you're diabetic, you don't want to be eating there all the time.
Right.
You know, a lot of pastas and carbs and the food just tastes all the same every time. And why doesn't a homeless person deserve a meal at a nice restaurant now and then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though some are presentable and can go in, some are nasty and stinky.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably wouldn't want to sit in a restaurant with them. But what's so bad about sharing a meal with somebody?
Sure.
Out of your 5-10 minutes out of your life.
Right.
And if these people refuse food, I would say that that's more the person that is the addict or isn't homeless.
Sure. That's good advice, right? If you offer someone food, that's kind of a good litmus test to be like.
Because that's, you know, what you're mainly out there. If you're out there to survive, why are you going to turn down food?
Right.
You
that's know, a good litmus test. I think that's helpful.
You still need hygiene products.
Right.
You know, you can pick up a lot of them around, but, you know, you like your certain particular brands.
Sure.
You know, that's where you got to take your pride in line and accept Colgate instead of Pepsi. But,
yeah.
You know, razors, they give you these little cheap, you get the 20 razors for a dollar, and they wouldn't even touch half of my beard.
And isn't that interesting, too, because that hits on the dehumanization thing. I think there's a thing like, oh, well, they're just homeless. They should be happy with whatever.
Yeah.
Where it's like, they should be happy eating dog food and, you know, this, and, you know, like, use it. It's like, we're people. We still have preferences.
You might have seen it on my Facebook a couple weeks ago. I wound up with all these restaurant food cards, gift cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, 8 of them in... besides not enough room in my wallet, what do I need all those for?
Mm-hmm.
So I wound up feeding 18 people with them.
That's awesome.
And I posted it on Facebook and told
it to you.
Yeah, I posted on Facebook that this would be a good way for people to help me help them help the homeless.
Sure.
And I got a bunch of comments and likes.
Yeah.
But nobody is sending them. Got a bunch of rhetoric, but no action.
Sure.
And I think it would be a great thing. You know, if you can find a homeless person that you can trust
with
a $5 gift card
to
go feed somebody.
But what I find with you, and one of the reasons I want to interview you, is what you really add to this dialogue. I don't expect you to solve homelessness or those sorts of things. I think what
you'll never solve it. Because you'll never solve mental illness and addiction.
Right.
And lazy.
But what you add to this conversation that's so needed is that homeless people are humans and we are to love humans. And the fact that we we take economics and we use economics to quantify someone's dignity. We use economics to quantify someone's humanity. I mean, that's about as
social status
unbiblical as can be, right? I mean, you know, then, and you even look at who Jesus did hang out with, particularly you look at the Beatitudes and him saying that the, basically to the bunch of rich, affluent religious leaders, the Pharisees, he was saying, no, the kingdom of God is for all those that you've kicked out. The kingdom of God is for the downtrodden. It's for the meek and the humble and all these things. So I want to kind of rally around that point, because I think it's just a point that really, really needs to be said. It's putting humanity onto homelessness. With that, you talked about what it feels like. You were, what was that, the note you showed me? With, it was some kind of note you had written, but it was about how, it was handwritten,
mm-hmm.
about how it feels like you're a bear trap on the sidewalk if you're a homeless person.
Yeah, that was part of it, because people, you'd be sitting on a bench or standing on a sidewalk, leaning
sure.
against a building or something, and people will take a detour around you.
Yes.
instead of just walking past
you. Described it, when you were talking to me about it, it sounded like the Good Samaritan parable in the Bible that Jesus tells,
mm-hmm.
where people go on the other side of the street to not have to just get near you.
Yeah.
And that's you. I mean, that's your life. It's the way you were describing it, right?
And if people say I'm dressed too nice and I'm too clean to be homeless, why do they go around me when they just see the homeless thing on my sign? You know, it wasn't because how I look or how I smell or anything. It's because I'm homeless.
The H word, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of people, when I come walking along with the box and the big sign hanging off my neck, and they'll be looking and they'll be trying to see around who they're sitting with at their little outdoor patio with their $40 plate meal. And once they see that homeless, once I get close enough for them to read the sign and see homeless, all of a sudden they're breaking their neck to look away.
Sure, yeah.
And same thing on the street. I just saw it the other day. There's two guys standing outside by the mission, and these two cute girls were walking up to them. They went out around the car on Michigan Street.
The girls you're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah.
Went about two cars down past them and come back in on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, what's that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Talk about the other side of it, and I know because you mentioned this in some of your Facebook posts about, I forget the words you use, but there's these ultra-aggressive homeless people who don't respect personal space.
Yeah.
And I run into them a lot. I work, you know, our church is downtown, and it's actually, it's hard for me to have a human interaction with them because they... Well, frankly, they don't approach me like a human. You know, they,
yeah.
none of my, when I, my friends that are, you know, I'm human to human with my friends, we sort of have a mutual respect for each other. No, none of my friends just see me, and we probably treat God this way, right? God, give me this, God, give me this, God, give me this. But it's sort of like, you know, they come to me, do you have this money or whatever? And it's, I feel like they're looking at me like I'm an ATM machine, not as a human, right? And so it makes it harder to want to walk by them, knowing they're not going to say hi to me, but every time I walk by them, I see the same people every single day. They're going to ask me, do you have this money? Do you have this money? So how does that attitude from those aggressive homeless people, how does that hurt homeless people as a whole? I think it hurts as a whole. I think that's part of what makes people want to avoid homeless people.
Homelessness is there's a lot of desperation in it.
Yeah.
And I think the ones that are aggressive panhandlers like that, their desperation is their addictions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, me, I don't approach people. I swallowed a lot of pride. You know, being homeless, even to just go out the way I do with my signs, even though I'm trying to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And trying to show people that a different perspective of homelessness and that there's talents and stuff like that. But the aggressive ones, I think, you know, I give people respect. I want respect to my pride. I'm not going to give up my dignity.
Yeah.
And I think if I start asking people for things instead of letting God bless me, then I'm then I've lost my dignity.
Sure.
And these people that are running like that and being really aggressive because they're itching for whatever their fix is.
I get that sense.
And they've lost their dignity because of their addictions or their mental illness or whatever.
And it's not that I can't still love them. I try to, and I need to figure out a way to love them.
Well, you got to love everybody.
Yeah.
You don't have to like them, but...
Yeah, yeah. With churches, I think, I genuinely think that in churches as a whole, including your suburban, affluent churches, I think that, not for all Christians, but for a lot of Christians, there's a genuine desire to help the homeless. They just don't know how to do it. The default, for better or worse, probably for worse, is we help, you know, we do a service project day where we go to the mission and we serve soup, right? The soup kitchen, quote-unquote, idea. What advice, so I'm giving you an open mic here, right, to Christians, to pastors, if churches, maybe it's an urban church, maybe it's a suburban church, maybe address both. How can churches effectively, I want to say minister to homeless people, but often churches will think of that as a project then. And often, like, you're just my project. And so I want to say, how do churches best love homeless people? Because love is much more holistic and inclusive for community. What can churches do?
Well, if they want to give, you know, like a soup kitchen and stuff, but, you know, food is something, people like food, you know, sure, but it has taste. And why doesn't a homeless person deserve a Jimmy John's now and then or something, if you can afford it? But there's a need for laundry. So bad laundry. Because they get these get clothes and they just throw them away. Because there's, you know, no way to really do it effectively. And it needs to be where they're at, not out in the suburbs or something.
Yeah, right.
And there's one thing you hardly ever can find is shoes. And, like, the church here, Crossroads, is doing the blanket thing, you know, make the quilt, and people donate a bunch of stuff, you know, the necessities of being on the street, like baby wipes and winter clothes.
What about the relational side of it? The humanity piece. Because I think you can get stuff. I think churches can do stuff pretty well. I think that churches are pretty bad at the relational side, the human piece.
Well,
even if you serve at the soup kitchen, a lot of times it's like you're on, you're serving, you're on this side of the line, and then the untouchables are on the other side of the line, and there's not interaction, there's not relationship. And to me, that's where the gospel needs to be. It's in the relationship. One thing, for Crossroads, we're downtown and walking distance to a lot of the shelters. I pride myself on all of my interaction with homeless folks over the years, both in Grand Rapids and here in Lansing, is just treat homeless people like people. So when they come into your church, you just treat them like people. You welcome them in like you would welcome that sort of ideal young couple with two good jobs that you think might tithe or something like that, that you'd welcome in some wealthy business owner. You just welcome them in like people, and you don't, personally, we don't have a homeless ministry. We don't serve pie to the homeless. We just serve pie for people, and we just have a ministry. Mm-hmm. And when homeless people come in, we just love them, and we invite them to get involved, and we get to know their names. And I think that's missing from the mindset of some church efforts. You have thoughts on that, the human part?
Well, people think homeless people use up their resources, which if you're collecting tithes, it ain't just to pay the bills. It's to take care of your...
Well, in the Old Testament, it's very clear that the tithe was for the temple and it was for the poor. That was the two reasons.
Yeah, well.
So, we've forgotten one of them.
Yeah, it's been gone by the wayside on that.
Yeah.
But, like, Crossroads here, have a program where you collect a bunch of stuff and invite the homeless in.
Right.
You know, that's one thing about the mission. It's a lot of Baptists. Nothing wrong with Baptists.
Mm-hmm.
But... it's one interpretation of the Bible, and not all people want to compare the Baptist interpretation of the Bible. It should be, you know, churches should seek out the homeless that follow their beliefs. You know, if the homeless person comes in, yeah, welcome them. Find out who they are. You know, I know what they need.
I think find out who they are is really important.
Yeah. Who they are is people, you know. But inside, you know, that's one of the misunderstandings of people and with homelessness is that they don't have any feelings.
Right.
We don't have an opinion.
Right.
Especially with my signs, if I get political and social and personal.
Yeah.
That's what my signs are all about. If I can't write none of that, I ain't writing none.
Right.
You know, because I'm not just going to go homeless, hungry, please help, God bless.
Exactly.
You know,
which is, again, dehumanizing. It's saying a regular human is allowed to have political views. A regular human is allowed to have social views. But if you're in personal views, but if you're homeless, you're not allowed to have those things.
Yeah, I was reading some books about homelessness, old books.
Homeless people read? I mean, again, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But homelessness used to be the politicians vied for their vote.
Mm.
The homeless people stuck together.
Interesting.
There was newsletters and pamphlets, and they rode the rails a lot, and they passed these pamphlets along city to city.
Yeah.
And, you know, to show each other unity. At least homeless people did that for each other then. Now it's cutthroat all the way around, you know.
That's a sad environment.
But that's because of the way society has treated them through the years. That just got more and more withdrawn and into themselves and what they need and what they want to get and who they can get it from. And
let me ask you a couple just closing questions.
Instead of God.
Sure, right. And that's a big piece. A couple closing questions here. Tell me about, so your signs, you mail them to somebody, right? Just briefly, who are you mailing those to? And is this the same person making the documentary?
I Googled homeless art.
Homeless art, okay.
And I found this guy named Willie Baronet. He's a professor at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. And he started his project in, I guess, 1993.
Okay.
And he buys homeless signs, and he exhibits them, and he uses them for homeless awareness, and he uses them he teaches marketing. And it's like an ultimate source of marketing, really.
So you send all your signs to him. How many of your signs does
he have? So I Googled it. I found him. I found him on Facebook. He's got a bunch of cardboard with black Sharpie, and mine, I try to use every color I can.
Yeah.
And I always try to put it on whiteboard. And I shot him some pictures, and he said, wow, I need some of those. And he said he'd send me $100 for four or five of them. And he sent me the $100 and the UPS label.
Cool.
And I said, and I watched more of his video and what he does with it, and I like his project, so I sent him 50 of them.
50 signs.
I sent him 50.
So he's got 55 of your signs.
Yeah, he's got 50.
I sent him
50. I got a bunch more. I just asked him if he wants another batch.
He's probably still swimming.
And the name of his project is We Are All Homeless.
Okay.
And he's got videos on YouTube and
I'll link
and
to those
Facebook.
Videos on that.
I just posted a couple of them today, so you can pick them off, man.
And then, last question, just tell about your big dreams. Tell us about the trip to Cumberland Gap. You mentioned it, but what does it take to fund that? How can people help with that? Any other things like that you want people to know about that's on your radar?
Well, I have a couple friends that are going to help me with a GoFundMe.
Okay. Is that up and running yet?
No.
Okay.
If anybody can help with that.
Okay.
But like one of them, she's got a benefit she's planning right now for a lady friend of hers that I forget what it's called, but she can't eat.
Okay.
So they put a tube in her or something, but her body rejected it. And now she's just going to waste away and die. So she's having a benefit for her. So all her time is tied up with that right now.
Okay.
So, but if I can, I would, I know people find it hard to believe that they could send some money or a $5 gift card to a homeless person and expect them to do with it what they say.
Yeah.
But I want to have somebody that would administer the money. Uh-huh. You know, I don't want it just sent to me. I have somebody to send it to. And when I reach the city that I want to get into, like Jackson, that's the first one. I'm picking Jackson because the pastor at the church where I worked, he left and went there to Jackson, so I think he'd be receptive. He was receptive to the homeless people that came to that church.
Yeah.
But like I say, give vouchers for laundry, grill out, and just tell them everything you just got, whatever I can get. You know, if I can get people to donate clothes and water and stuff,
right,
besides the grilling, just tell them this came from these people, from God. God directed these people to give this stuff to me, to give to you.
Yeah.
And if you got a problem with them in your heart, clear it up and get with them, because he's got plenty more in store for you.
Yeah. So Jackson, and then where are the next stops?
I think it was Dayton.
Dayton, Ohio.
Cincinnati. Covington and Lexington.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And then Cumberland Gap from there. And if things have gone well and people have responded and they've still got resources, just keep going.
Will we ever see you again in Lansing?
You never know. Lansing would always need my insight.
Yes, right. That's great.
Even though they don't think so.
Well, Chris, I really appreciate this. This has been really helpful. And we'll put your Facebook page. It's just Chris Pruett, P-R-U-E-T-T. Chris welcomes your friend requests. Would love to interact with you more.
I'm waving in my Detroit Lions booth. He's waving. I'm rebuilding. I got a new one.
I get some good photos on there. I saw that. You can check out Chris's, is it the wall of garbage? The tree of garbage.
No, tree of trash.
Tree of trash. Tree of trash. It's like toys and cool stuff that Chris finds and he's putting up in his campsite. You can check out his campsite there. Chris is an awesome guy. He's a great part of our church. And you'll love to get to know him as well.
One more thing. I had a little tax money back in May, and I rented a limo. And I went and bought 50 cheeseburgers and went and handed out cheeseburgers. So the limo company loved it. They want to give me a freebie.
Nice.
And I got a guy here at church that wants to buy the cheeseburgers. I'm trying to get some other donation stuff, like chips to go with the cheeseburgers and water and maybe some clothes items. I don't know, whatever.
Cool.
However God can touch people's hearts. I posted on Facebook. I got a bunch of rhetoric, but no action from anybody.
Okay.
But I'm calling it Cheeseburger Express. Whenever the limo company gets time, they're doing a lot of weddings right now. But they're going to fit me in sometime soon here.
So if you want to help with Cheeseburger Express, you can connect with Chris on Facebook about that as well. And really, my call is for Christians to just love everyone and to know what the Bible says about loving the poor specifically. The Bible talks about loving the poor a lot. If you type in the poor or poverty into your concordance, you will find verse upon verse upon verse of how close to the heart of God the poor are. And if you're not loving the poor, if you're not in some fashion, you are not following the Bible. I mean, straight up, it's just very clear all throughout the Old Testament, the New Testament. So, great insight from Chris, and just encourage you to, whatever your community is, find the folks that are hurting and treat them like humans. Love them with the love of Christ, and you'll see amazing things happen. So with that, we will wrap up this episode of the Behind the Curtain Ministry Podcast. Again, check out at acrossroads.net, and you will find the post that has all the extra bonus goodies from today's interview with Chris. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or on Podbean, and you will see our next episode posted within the next few weeks. I will see you next time behind the curtain and at a crossroads. Down.